AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard is the best dang weatherman in town. Of course, bringmethenews.com, his YouTube page, Premier leaving as well. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about what is going through the Twin Cities right now and is going to go through the Twin Cities over the next few days. Hey, Sven, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm damper. I'm actually still soaked. I had to go out and check a gutter in this. That was not pleasant.
How do you know you're an old homeowner that you're checking a gutter?
Yeah, checking. I better go check that before a real trouble starts. That was me. That was a heck of a storm that came through here. It held together. I think some of the forecast models showed it kind of skipping north of the metro, but it held together and came right through the Twin Cities. That was a lot of rain.
Yeah, most of the metro picked up anywhere from a half inch to an inch of rain just with that burst of with that cluster of storms, which moved through pretty quick. So while a half inch to an inch may not sound that remarkable, though this summer, of course, it's exceedingly remarkable. It all happened in about a 20 to 30 minute span. So it was pretty heavy. But southwest of the Twin Cities, it actually rained heavier. Some spots there picked up over 2 inches of rain. Wow. Estimated by radar. Yeah, and this was what we call an MCS, a mesoscale convective system. It's just a fancy word for a cluster of organized storms. So we have all types of different types of organized storms, from supercells to squall lines. And this is basically a squall line. They started as individual cells last night in South Dakota and held together. Once they start producing wind, they organize themselves. And that outflow, that straight line wind that we see with these, actually is what helps to organize the storms. When we talk about a thunderstorm being organized, it's all about separating your warm inflow, which is your food, from your cool rain-cooled outflow, which can choke off a storm. You know, your average garden variety thunderstorm lasts about 20 to 30 minutes. It bubbles up. We see these sometimes. You see these a lot in places like Florida. A cloud grows straight up, rains on itself, and literally kills itself. But here we get storms that organize quite frequently, and they are able to separate it. And that outflow, those straight line winds, act like basically a cold front for the storm, pushing the air out, and then that just literally plows up more warm, humid air up and over into feeding the storm. And so these can last for hours. In fact, the storms are still going across Wisconsin, you know, going on basically 12 plus hours of life. So, you know, compared to your average garden variety thunderstorm, 20, 30 minutes, these can go on, you know, these have gone on for 12 to 24 hours sometimes have been recorded.
There was a very interesting effect that happened afterwards. I went outside, and as a matter of fact, when I was out looking at my gutter at the tail end of this, I could smell it. I could smell the forest fires. And I think these are the ones up in northern Minnesota that it sounds like that what happened is that the rainstorm knocked some of that smoke that was in the upper atmosphere down towards us. Is that true?
Yeah, it's partly and kind of sucked it in from all directions. So I'm actually cabin/dog sitting for a couple weeks up here in northwestern Wisconsin, just north of St. Croix Falls. And I woke up this morning too. At first I thought it was fog, but then smelled, you know, the bonfire smell that many of us felt a month ago. And sure enough, I go refresh my smoke map. Air quality was perfect in the Twin Cities, but 50 miles as the crow flies where I was to the northeast, it was super smoky, and that had wandered in on a very light northeast wind straight out of northeastern Minnesota, crossing Lake Superior, and had flown across northern Wisconsin. And so what I think happened is the inflow to these storms sucked that smoky air out of Wisconsin up into the storms, and then, yes, rained out over the Twin Cities. So you kind of had it coming in from the east, being sucked in from the storms as they moved east, but then sort of rained down, as pushed down as well, as it was sucked into the storm and then thrown down by the rain. So yeah, very cool phenomenon. And then many of us saw behind the storm these gusty winds that weren't from the storms themselves, but sort of what we call a wake low that develops. When you get it, sometimes when these systems last as long as they do, that they create a void of air because pushing air out ahead of it. Well, air has to go in behind it. You know, the best way I can describe it is, you're pushing that paddle through the water. You know, you get that initial gust of water, if you will. But then behind it, the water has to fill in from elsewhere. Same thing in the atmosphere. The air acts like a fluid, just like water. And sometimes in exceptional cases like today, you get some really crazy wind gusts out in far western Minnesota, where, of course, the wind is able to blow more easily of, you know, over 50 miles an hour, not directly associated with a line of storms, which these storms were producing. You know, they had quieted down for a couple of hours. They had produced some strong wind gusts in western Minnesota. And then for a couple of hours, they looked like they were just not going to do much, just bring rain to the metro. And then just before hitting the southwest metro, they started gusting again over 60 miles an hour and pushed right across the south metro. And I know I heard from several people of trees down, and one person I had messaged me on Facebook that they had narrowly missed a tree in South Minneapolis at, I can't remember the exact cross street, it's 46 and something, South Minneapolis. A tree fell down right in front of them as they were driving, and they barely missed it. So these were nasty storms, and this is just the first of at least probably two or three rounds of storms that are going to bring heavy rain, much needed rain. And I know we don't like this severe weather, but that's just how it works around here during our growing season. You got to get it from storms, and sometimes they're strong.
You, in your weather forecast, you talk about the water that's available to create this rain event. It's interesting because I did spend some time down in South Carolina, and I'd be out on the beach right on the ocean and be nice sunny day, but 2 miles inland, the clouds would be pitch black because, especially at midday, because the heat got there, absorbed the water from the land and created what was very similar to what we saw here this afternoon, a torrential downpour for at least an hour or so, and kind of did that. But that kind of seems, you know, that's kind of the system that's created out there. Talk a little bit about what is this moisture that's building up that's creating these big rain events? That there's a term that you used in your weather forecast that you just put out today. I can't remember what it was.
Precipitable water.
That's it.
So it's just basic. So you just break it down, precipitable. What, you know, it's basically the water content. If you think of the atmosphere as a column, right, from the ground up thousands of feet, how much water is in that column that's precipitable that a storm could squeeze out in theory? Mm-hmm. And we look at that because obviously the higher that content, the more potential that these downpours can create some heavier rains. And then we look at go further and say, okay, how does it compare to average for this time of year? And so that really can give us an idea of anomalous type heavy rainfall events. And the wave of moisture that's coming through tonight, and then again, particularly it looks not like now late Saturday, is going to be more than double the normal amount of content for this time of year, which can already be a juicy time of year as it is. So that's what gives us the inclination that we could be looking at some places. I mean, these are localized. I think most of us, by the end of Saturday, we'll have seen, you know, when you combine today through tomorrow and Saturday's waves of moisture, most of us on average will probably have seen anywhere from 1.5 to 3 inches of rain. But there are going to be some localized spots, it appears, particularly just south of the Twin Cities, that could end up with 5-6+ inches of 3-day rain totals. So those will be localized, very almost impossible to predict exactly where that will happen. But we can generally say it looks like that setup is going to happen just south of the Twin Cities. Doesn't mean we're out of it. The Twin Cities could get it anywhere, basically central southern Minnesota or western Wisconsin is in that general vicinity where anything could shift, and that could be the spot.
I want to bring up something that's a larger scale globally here. Tennessee, China, two or three places in Europe. We have had these, what can only be described as hurricane-like, you know, storms that are just dumping insane amounts of water happening over land in a very short period of time, and it seems to be happening more often. Is that something you're noticing too?
Absolutely. You know, and we've talked about this before. Minnesota's overall trend is that we're getting warmer and wetter. This year happens to be an extreme drought. This is an exceptional year for us when we look at the overall trend. And, you know, it's a perfect example of we're still going to have weather, those seasonal changes. Some years will be drier, but most years are wetter. And in particular, what's pushing our annual precipitation totals upwards are extreme rainfall events. So in an average Minnesota summer, we're seeing more of these crazy downpours that, you know, historically, a storm event that might have produced 1 or 2 inches of rain, which is crazy. Now those are more like 2, 3, 4, 5-inch rainfall events. A warmer atmosphere holds more water, and it's not just over here. The whole northern hemisphere is remarkably hot this year, and that's why we've been seeing heat dome after heat dome, whether it's Northern Africa pushing into Italy, creating record high temperatures in Spain and Italy, Greece, Turkey, Western U.S., Minnesota, Siberia. There's just more heat in the system, and a warmer atmosphere holds more water, because how do you get water into the air? You heat it up. That's how we get, that's how you evaporate water. And, you know, most of the planet, of course, is oceans, and you got warm air over oceans. You got a lot of evaporation. So there's just more water available. And so, yeah, we're seeing these extreme events, but the lesson of climate change is basically the key word is extreme. So, you know, would our drought have been this bad historically? Maybe, maybe not. You know, we know the 30s were some pretty crazy droughts, but this seems to be in a more extreme scenario than it otherwise would have been. And who knows, next summer might be a deluge of floods for the region.
Mm-hmm. It is just, it is bizarre, because we, I came through Tennessee. Now, I didn't go on the central part where this happened. But when you look at it, it looks just like some sort of something out of a science fiction movie where someone's created it. It doesn't look like a normal storm like we used to see. But, you know, because of this, I mean, this seems to be the new normal, that you just have to hope and pray that your community and a large swath of a land around you isn't subjected to this torrential downpour of 8 inches in 4 hours, which, you know, can wipe out a lot of things.
Yeah. And, you know, and you said it, new normal, and I get flack from some people for saying that, because they're like, well, we don't want people to think this is the new normal and like get used to it and become, you know, apathetic. And I'm like, I get that. But part of, you know, we've talked about before, part of the solutions to climate change is, A, we have to adapt to the climate as it is now. And this is the new normal. These kind of events, these extreme droughts, you know, what's part of the problem they've been talking about with the Greenwood fire and fighting it in northeastern Minnesota? There are no resources. The West is on crazy fire. So if you're the U.S. Forest Service, you're having to allocate, you know, your firefighters and planes and crew. Where do you go? To the California fires that are hundreds of thousands of acres, mm-hmm. or a Minnesota fire that's 20,000 plus acres? And it all depends upon, well, who's most at risk. And those are the choices we're having to make right now. You know, and Congress, which doesn't seem to be able to get much done ever, that's something that they have to figure out. You know, hey, we need to maybe double the budget of the U.S. Forest Service firefighting abilities, and, you know, and global partnerships. I know that we have a lot of crew from Australia, because this is their quiet season. So, you know, part of it is the world who's dealing with these fires. We send our crews to the parts of the world where it's fire season, and then the U.S. Forest Service is going to have to help chip in Australia come our winter, because then that's their fire season. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of adaptation that has to happen. And of course, we have to prevent the further catastrophic warming. And I hope that, you know, the last several years where, you know, even Americans are waking up, it's majorities now of Americans that realize climate change is a thing, that this gives people an idea that we don't want to get to, we're not even to 1.5 degrees warming yet. That's the threshold that the Paris Accords are trying to prevent. Can you even imagine 2 degrees of global warming, which is not that far off in the future, if we don't make some major changes, major quick?
You brought up the Greenwood fire. How much of this rain system is going to hit the northern Minnesota area to where it can actually knock down some of these fires?
Well, knocking down these fires is a tall order. And I don't think people can quite appreciate, these fires are so big and intense that a downpour, even like what came through here, is not going to be necessarily enough to put it out. It definitely helps, though. One of the things we saw is, you know, Monday there was this huge flare up, but then Tuesday it was cloudier, cooler, humidities were higher. It didn't rain, but just those better conditions gave a lot better, you know, help to firefighters to at least try to start to contain the thing a little bit more. And so the one improvement over the last 24 hours is it hadn't looked like they would be getting that much of this rain in northeastern Minnesota. Now it does look like they'll be getting a little bit. On average, the models do dump maybe up to an inch of rain on top of that very area. That would be obviously huge, because the drought is worse in northern Minnesota. I just updated on my weather page the drought conditions across Minnesota. Subtle improvements for places like the Twin Cities, but northern Minnesota, it's gotten worse. So I was looking, for example, Beltrami County, where Bemidji is.
Yeah.
It was their driest July ever, and their second driest year to date ever. And to put into perspective how much worse it is up there compared to here, in the Twin Cities, it was about our 10th or 11th driest July, and 10th or 11th driest year to date, which is significant, but you figure it's 10 times worse up there. And it's the same sort of thing for St. Louis County, first or second driest July in year to date. So it is much worse up there. And you've got the forests and you have tinder from storms that have knocked down things. So, yeah, they really need the rain even more, if you can imagine, than we do in central Minnesota.
One thing out of the metro area, out of the state as well, Ida is the next named tropical storm. I don't know if they've named it yet, but there is a tropical depression down by Cuba that's expected to run into the Gulf of Mexico and then slam into Louisiana. They're expecting it to gain strength. How big of a hurricane is that one? Do you have any idea how that is going? Because the Gulf of Mexico just at this time of the year becomes an incubator for these storms.
Yeah, the water, you know, the fuel for hurricanes is warm surface water, particularly 85 degrees plus, and the whole Gulf is warm. And part of what we saw in the Northeast last week with Henry was that the water off the coast of New England was way warmer than normal. Not quite enough to fuel a hurricane. That's why it weakened before it reached shore. But the reason it was able to get that far north was that the waters were warm. So with Ida in particular, you know, I've been concentrated on our weather the last 24 hours. I don't want to throw out any predictions. I haven't even looked at the Gulf. I know that the activity is definitely picking up there, and behind that, there are a couple other areas of concern the Hurricane Center are watching. But it's anybody's guess with how warm and how fueled the Gulf of Mexico is, and it's been a wet summer down there to the south too. So that plays into this. You know, hurricanes are bad anyway with storm surge and flooding. But we got to remember, it's been a wet summer in Texas, Louisiana, and parts of Georgia. So these hurricanes become particularly more menacing if they hit these areas that are, in some cases, 1 to 2 feet above normal for rainfall for the year.
You had brought up, and one final thing I want to get here before we get to a little bit of the forecast over the next few days at least, is that there is a legitimate chance that 2021 could end up being the hottest summer on record. We'd actually gotten to the second position. Does it still look like today's a bit of a cool day as far as temperatures goes, but is it still a chance that 2021 will actually end up being the warmest summer on record?
I'm glad you brought that up. I almost forgot about it. And I think it's a very, I keep calling it exciting, not in a good way, but it's exciting because it's incredible to me that we're going to surpass 1988 and any of the 1930s. And it does look likely. I crunched the numbers. If you just plug in the final 6 days of August, just what we're forecasting or a blend of the models, we still look to surpass 1988 by at least 0.2 of a degree. And I even hypothetically, let's say the forecasts are off by a few degrees too warm and we cool it off, we still beat 1988 by 0.1 of a degree. So I almost guarantee this is the hottest summer we have ever recorded in the Twin Cities. Wow. And what's fascinating, I'm going to do a whole write-up and video just on this once summer's over. But the main thing is, and people are like, well, wait, how is that possible? Because 1988 had 44 days above 90. We've only quote-unquote, had 26, which is more than double. But the key is, and this is really the greatest example of climate change, the key was that we've been consistently hot this summer. 1988, the 1930s had your normal summer variation where, yeah, it got hotter than it did this year, hundreds and more 90s, but they also got your normal cool downs, days in the 70s. We almost had none of those this year. It was consistently warm by day, by night, from June 1st right up to the end of August. 1988 was definitely hot. August started hot, but it really cooled off. They had a day only in the 60s. Late August of 1988. We don't really remember those. We remember the days that were just so exceedingly hot. But yeah, this year's going to surpass any other year recorded because it was consistently hot, which tells us there's more heat in the system. The globe is warm. So it tells us that there's actually something else going on even more than Minnesota because of that fact that we're going to surpass it by just being warm consistently than just our extremes.
So storms reforming over in the Twin Cities tonight, correct?
Yeah, it does look like more storms we're gonna watch South Dakota, southwestern Minnesota, probably late in the evening and overnight for that to fill in and then move through. So it's going to be one of these situations where you may be woke up by at 2, 3, 4 in the morning to some thunderstorms. And it's possible we're going to see not just tonight, but again, Saturday evening, one of these MCSs to develop, the kind of storms that developed and came through in the middle of the day today, but more so this time later in the night instead. And those are prolonged storms that produce heavy amounts of rain. So, yeah. And then tomorrow, I think most of the day will be mainly dry. There'll be a hit or miss shower and thunderstorm, but a warm, cloudy, muggy day, and then more storms potentially developing tomorrow night. And then same thing on Saturday. It's going to be very humid. Some peaks of sun Saturday. I think Saturday will be the day to watch for more destabilization and potential severe weather in the evening. And then it looks like that final round of moisture will be Saturday evening, Saturday night. But the timing and everything on all this is very much fluid. A system like what came through today can completely change the equation. So definitely want to pay attention to the forecast if you have plans this weekend.
Sven Sundgaard. Sven, thank you very much. I'll post all your weather stuff up a little bit later on. And of course, if you're not following him on YouTube and bringmethenews.com, you are just wrong. Premier Living as well. That weather page there is outstanding.
Yep.
Sven, thank
just
you very much.
Just updated all the drought stuff just about an hour ago.
I'll make sure I get that posted out for you. Sven Sundgaard.